I don't know what's going on with Skype. For some reason, it just went all banjax for about 5 minutes. Yeah. And I couldn't figure out what was going on. I rebooted the machine.
I couldn't figure out what banjaxed was. Is that like bollocksed?
Yeah. I'm afraid that's an Irishism.
Yeah. How's life? You doing all right?
Yeah, and things are okay down here. We're very busy with community stuff. I mean, we had a very successful guitar congress last weekend.
I'm a guitar player. I love that.
Yeah, I know. It was very good. We were very fortunate to have a couple of people down from Austin, Texas, where the school of music there, I think it's the University of Texas, has a program designed to teach people guitar in a very methodical and accessible way.
I don't know, but it's University of Texas. Are they learning like Johnny Cash tunes or something?
Well, actually, no. I'm but very, very high quality classical guitar, so these guys came down.
Right, flamenco and stuff is all there too, right? Because it's next to Mexico. It used to be part of Mexico. That's right. They know how to play.
So anyway, and it was great. It was really good. But and we've got more important things to talk about.
Let's just before we get into this, a little bit of context on the declaration that came out of the BRICS conference that just concluded. I was about to tell people to imagine the globe and use the old color red for the block that's now Russia, China, India, Brazil, and South Africa. And if you look at what looks like the result of this conference, suddenly, like, there's an economic system that takes up almost the entire Western Hemisphere south of the Rio Grande, or in any event, south of Mexico. And that is where Russia and China and South Africa and India are going to be playing. And if you look at what share of the geography they have in the Eastern Hemisphere, it's half the population and much more than half the surface area of the world is being integrated into a separate economic structure.
Yeah, it's all kind of potential, isn't it?
Oh, well, because.
You know, and maybe we should take a couple of steps back The so-called BRICS countries, and I think the BRICS acronym comes from a Western analyst, Jim something, who was some Goldman Sachs analyst.
It came from Goldman Sachs. That's right. Yeah.
Yeah, and he came up with this acronym for Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa, and they've been kind of in conversation since 2005, and over the last decade, really, because I mean, it's almost 10 years. I know the last decade they've set up this they've consolidated their relationships, and they all have common reasons as leading countries that in the past would have been called developing countries, and now they're being called emerging economies Western economists who are obviously saturated with the ideology of corporate capitalism.
Yeah, no kidding.
For outside observers, the interesting question is, to what extent are the current trends that have been put in place at this latest summit, which is by far the most It's a massive advance in terms of the last 10 years for the countries concerned, because they've taken concrete steps to set up real structures. It's not just a talking shop, mm-hmm. and they set up what they're calling the New Development Bank with $100 billion dollars of capital that provided equally by the five countries concerned. So they're hoping to overcome the problems that have beset the International Monetary Fund and the World Bank since their founding back at the end of the Second World War.
That's right.
In which the United States and its allies have had a dominant say.
Yeah, you said basically that this is the undoing, or some have been saying it's the undoing of Bretton Woods, or the successor to Bretton Woods.
Yeah, and if you what's the name of that guy, that Valentin Tatasanov, he wrote an article in Strategic Culture, the Russian English language website.
Yeah, I'm looking at it.
In which he said, his argument is that what the Brazil meeting of the BRICS means is that Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa are saying to the United States and its allies, either you put in place what we agreed in 2010 as a redistribution of voting power in the IMF and the World Bank, or we're just going to do our own thing,
right?
And you can go to hell.
And it's like that in the marketplace too, by the way. If you look at, if you look at the markets for this, you know, these financial products, basically, a lot of it, even going back to when the World Bank was the redevelopment and whatever bank, right after World War II, they were rebuilding and developing.
Yeah, the Bank of Reconstruction and Development.
Right, right, right. Yeah, so that and then the successive additional missions that, as that was being done, that the World Bank and the IMF took on, you now have competition with the countries that those things are intended for, where this was an instrument of diktat, basically, from the United States to make these different nations. If you need money, we're the only game in town. If you want money, here's what you have to do. One, at the very beginning, what they did was they made one country fire their communist government, France. That was the first loan that they did. And they said, well, you have a coalition government with communists, they got to go, even though they've been voted in. And they've been doing that ever since. These guys are saying, you want the money? Let's sit down. What do you need? And they do not impose those conditions.
No, and that's absolutely crucial, isn't it? There's no conditionalities to the kinds of exchanges that the BRICS countries are engaging in, and with the most importantly, with Latin America, because I was absolutely astounded that so many Latin American countries turned up to the meeting between CELAC, the Community of Latin American and Caribbean States, and the BRICS countries in Brasilia. You even had Paraguay turning up. Mm. Now, Paraguay is a complete pawn of the United States in terms of its government. And so that in itself, Paraguay is a tiny, almost insignificant country in global terms.
Right.
But in regional terms, if you've got a very, very close US ally bucking its expected relationship with the United States and taking part in this discussion with Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa, that seems to me a bellwether kind of, it tells you which way the things are going in no uncertain terms.
Yep.
And so, if you look at all the discussions that happened around that meeting between BRICS and the Community of Latin American and Caribbean States, the main meeting was between the BRICS countries and Ecuador, Costa Rica, Cuba, and this is also very important, and Antigua and Barbuda.
Mm-hmm.
And those countries were meeting as equals. The reason that Antigua and Barbuda was included in that discussion is because CELAC has established ground rules whereby the steering group of countries that coordinates policy for the Community of Latin American and Caribbean States must include a member of CARICOM.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why Antigua and Barbuda was in those meetings with BRICS. And that, mm-hmm. that's a completely different approach.
Yeah, it's integration.
A tiny country like Antigua and Barbuda, what's its population? 120,000 people?
Yeah, something like a small city,
they had equal representation at this very high table, at this top table of global powers.
Mm-hmm.
Can you imagine that in the G7, in a G7 arrangement?
Nope.
And it just wouldn't happen.
No, it hasn't happened.
And then around those discussions, of course, there were individual discussions. Argentina was talking to Russia about nuclear power, with China about its commercial relationships, trade relationships. Bolivia was talking with China about a future satellite to do geological exploration for new mineral deposits, which are extremely important from a Chinese point of view.
Mm-hmm. So, and also Brazil and Peru talking with China about a transcontinental railroad.
Yeah, and that puts in context, doesn't it, our discussion of last week with about the Nicaraguan Interoceanic Canal. I mean, what's mm-hmm. happening? I mean, what's happening is that China, Russia, Brazil, certainly in relation to Latin America, those are the three main countries, they want to expand the infrastructure available for their trade. You know, for the trade between Latin America and Asia. Mm-hmm. And so, and what's likely to happen as time goes on is that we'll see a similar process happening in Africa because, right. of course, China has a very significant presence in Africa that's regarded by the Western powers as a fundamental challenge to their global domination of trade and the international financial system,
which it is.
So, yeah, and in fact, and if you read the Fortaleza Declaration, which I haven't been able to find in Spanish, that's something that's really puzzling. And the only place that I've been able to find the declaration is in its English version on the website of the Russian presidency. But if you read it, there are a couple of very interesting things. In terms of a challenge to the international financial system dominated by the West. One is that they're going to focus on insurance and reinsurance. Mm. And the terrible tragedy that happened in Novorossiya, some people still regard as Eastern Ukraine.
Right.
Of the MH17 Malaysian Airlines Boeing 777.
Mm-hmm.
And that tragedy highlights the importance of very mundane things like insurance and reinsurance.
That's true.
Because the whole of global trade depends obviously on transport and who does the insurance for the oil tankers and the airliners and all that. And it's mostly Lloyd's of London in the City of London. And it's mostly insurance brokers in the United States like the American Insurance Group of ill repute that was bailed out by U.S. taxpayers to the tune of, what was it, $170 billion?
Man, I probably couldn't get car insurance from them if I walked in, even though I helped pay for it.
So, yeah, and the international financial system depends for its fundamental mechanisms on really mundane things like, well, who's going to insure this oil tanker and that kind of thing.
That's last resort finance. That's at the bottom of everything else to protect against catastrophe.
Yeah, so now what the BRICS countries are saying, well, sod this.
Why are we
paying people in London and New York and maybe Frankfurt
mm-hmm.
For our insurance and reinsurance of our fundamental trade?
Right.
And they're gonna do it.
That's right.
And that's a deep challenge to the international financial system. And another deep challenge to the international financial system is, I think it's section 12 of the Fortaleza Declaration talks about, let's see if I can find it. It talks about, I know it's not section 12, it's somewhere else. Oh yeah, here it is, section 14. Cooperation among BRICS export credits and guarantees agencies.
Right.
And so that too is going to have a fundamental effect on the stability of global trade,
right.
Originating from the BRICS countries.
Right.
So, and those things to me are fundamental. But another fundamental thing is that, and I can't remember which section it is in the Fortaleza Declaration, but somewhere in the Fortaleza Declaration, they talk about the importance of all human rights, including the right to development. Now, when they say that, what you've got is these five extremely powerful countries saying to the whole Western human rights establishment, you can stuff your emphasis on civil and political rights, which we admit are extremely important, but what you leave out in the West is the importance of fundamental things like the right to development, like economic and cultural and social rights. And that, to me, is a probably, it's a little, just a little telltale sign that what the BRICS are doing is that even in an even more comprehensive global way than the Soviet Union used to do so, they are challenging the whole ideological basis of Western corporate capitalism. That's because what they're saying, and in fact the title of the recent this recent summit in Brazil of the BRICS countries in Fortaleza, the theme was social inclusion. And so what they're saying is, we're not interested in the fundamental tenets of corporate capitalism. We want to develop our economies for the benefits of our people, the majority world. We're not interested in just profit for a corporate elite.
The statement reads, it's under number 28, we continue to treat all human rights, including the right to development, in a fair and equal manner, on the same footing and with the same emphasis. We will foster dialogue and cooperation on the basis of equality and mutual respect in the field of human rights, both within BRICS and in multilateral fora, including the UN Human Rights Council, taking into account the necessity to promote, protect, and fulfill human rights in a non-selective, non-politicized, and constructive manner without double standards.
Yeah, and can you imagine that? You know, I'm...
That don't sound like the IMF or the World Bank, for sure.
So in that sense, maybe the immediate concrete structures that are being set up, like the New Development Bank and what they're calling the Contingency Reserve Arrangement, which is their equivalent of the International Monetary Fund. And maybe immediately in concrete terms, and those, it's going to take a while for those institutions to make an impact. But what I now think is more fundamental is that what this Fortaleza Declaration does is, and President Vladimir Putin himself emphasized this aspect of it recently over the last day or two, what that declaration does is it formalizes a very clear ideological alternative that perhaps didn't exist before, not in explicit terms. And what the Fortaleza Declaration does is it makes that alternative explicit, and it actually underwrites what, for example, in Latin America, the ALBA countries are trying to do. In fact, if you read the comments by different leaders, in particular President Xi of China and President Putin of the Russian Federation, there are little key words, little telltale words like complementarity, and as opposed to competition, which is the Western key word.
Right. Absolutely true. It's a whole different model. And, you know, it's funny, this is monumental in terms of human development, potentially. If this is allowed, or if it survives the attempts to smother it, if it's allowed to grow, this is a fundamentally new global economy that's under construction, and with again half the people of the world, and more than half the geography, a huge share of the natural resources, a lot of projects to do to bring everyone up to snuff, and not for nothing depriving the existing structure of the blood that it's been sucking of all of these economies, so that it has to either fundamentally change or it'll collapse.
Yeah, and one shouldn't underestimate the difficulties, because there, and I think we've mentioned in the past, there are fundamental contradictions within, for example, Brazil, India, and South Africa. And Brazil and South Africa in particular, extremely vulnerable to pressure from the Western corporate capitalist system, because so much of their system is deeply entwined with that. For example, even Petrobras, the Brazilian National Petroleum Company, has very strong Western corporate interests there among its shareholders. And of course, South Africa is notorious. I mean, we saw this recently in the dreadful massacre of the platinum miners. The interests of Western corporate mining interests in South Africa's mining sector, which is fundamental to the South African economy, so they have those kinds of problems to resolve and contradictions to resolve and work out.
For sure.
And India, of course, has, you know, it's a very ambivalent that its history of foreign policy and economic policy has been extremely ambivalent.
Well, if you look at SAWAC, and we got to wrap it up, but if you look at SAWAC as an example, you have exactly that condition among the membership there, all those kinds of contradictions, even, you know, since there's more players, it's even more complex, and right. Yet it's doing very well.
Yeah, okay, and that's a very valid point. And let's see, we can only wait and see how things develop. And I think you're right. And I think this is a fundamental change for humanity in terms of its available choices.
How often do we get to discuss that? Thanks a lot, Tony. Take care of yourself.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Take care, Tom.
Bye-bye.